Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Ron Kittle.
Doug Rooster Raider.
Manager. And we got our butts tallywhacked one day. So the guys were hungry. They get fed now by professional chefs. I mean, we were lucky to have a chicken wing from Willie Thompson. So we had a big old aluminum thing of spaghetti. And all the players, after the game, they were running up to go eat. So Rooster comes in that locker room, and he takes off his uniform pants, and he's in his jock strap. And my locker is the only one that can see into his office. So he's on a rant. He goes, "You guys want to eat?" Not counting all the words he said beforehand. He jumps up on the table, and he sits in this big old platter of spaghetti. Nobody says a word. They kind of just sit down. And I'm in my seat. I didn't even go in the lunchroom. And Rooster's in his office. And I'm looking at him, and he's cracking up, and he's pulling spaghetti out of his mouth.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on The Score.
Yeah, that's clearly intelligent sports talk. You can certainly hear that. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and the first ever 8-passenger Hyundai Palisade. We are going to play it by ear a little bit today because of some unfortunate extenuating circumstances that have changed our plans for the day. So we're looking forward to having some voices and some discussion and some fond memories of a dear friend who passed away last night. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. You email us at BernsteinandMcKnight@670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. You want to text the text zone, please do. It's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. He's at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app.
Download it indeed.
And then you can stream The Score on your mobile devices. You can also interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Rick Camp is on the board. The executioner, Ray Diaz, is in the back doing what he does. But some very sad news comes to us this morning.
Yeah, it is. It's real sad. I hope everybody listening, I hope listeners to the Bernstein and McKnight Show and everybody who listens to this station were able to catch a couple of minutes that our boss, Mitch Rosen, spent with Mully and Haw. Ed Farmer, the play-by-play man of the White Sox for a good long time, passed away last night. The White Sox tweeted about it this morning, and friends close to Ed found out at varying points last night, obviously, and this morning as well. I worked with Ed for 2 years, and loved doing it. Just really loved doing it, and the guy loved baseball. It was tangible when you talked to Ed. You felt it. There was nobody. There's nobody like Ed Farmer. There's absolutely nobody like Ed Farmer. And just having spent the little bit of time I did with him, it was really great to have heard Mitch tell some stories about Ed. He's known him a lot longer than I have. Everybody who knew Ed, though, even just a little bit, really knew Ed. He never put on anything. He never gave you anything fake. The moment you met Ed Farmer really seemed the moment you met Ed Farmer. His broadcast style was unique in every sense. He adored the White Sox. And I think more than anything else, his connection with that team is really emblematic of where he came from, 79th and Francisco. He was proud of being from the South Side. He was proud of being a White Sox fan. And he was damn proud that he came from where he came from and reached the major leagues the way he did. He had stories, lots and lots of stories. And I'm just really proud and really thankful to have spent just a little bit of time with him. And I can only imagine how that feeling is obviously magnified in everyone who spent so much more time with him, you know, who worked with the White Sox, his family, players, old friends of his who are really close, and my heart goes out to everybody connected to Ed, because I know that if you meant a lot to Ed Farmer, then Ed meant a lot to you. That's just the way he was.
We talk a lot about broadcasters and our relationship as fans and listeners with broadcasters as well, and the meaning of some of that stuff. And at these times where so many voices in sports are homogenizing, we get a lot of people who sound like broadcasters. And if you're sort of the broadcasting nerds, will trace everybody back to a different tree where you get the New York basketball broadcasters who all sound like Marv Albert, and you get baseball broadcasters who sound like Mel Allen and Vin Scully because of Red Barber, and draw these. Ed Farmer was a sui generis broadcasting voice who was uniquely of his place, and that's something we don't get as much of anymore. You know, we talk about a little bit some of the Cajun guys, whether it's Bobby Hebert or Hokie Gajon or those guys that sound like the Louisiana swamps, or some guys who really sound like a certain Philadelphia accent. The fact that Ed Farmer at St. Rita High School, of the Southwest side, in the way that he was, to ascend to being the voice of the Chicago White Sox, to, like you say, there's no pretense there. It all meant something to him, and he wasn't everybody's cup of tea as a broadcaster. It was really an acquired taste, but once you acquired it, that was there for you. That was the person describing your White Sox baseball. And I think it's always sad when we lose unique voices and unique perspectives, no matter what your own personal tastes may be. It's difficult when somebody who is of a team, of an area, of a place, and so rooted in that, and was so meaningful in how the action was described and how you consume baseball, it's sad when that's not there anymore.
It's immensely sad. You know, Ed meant a lot to a lot of people over there, and he meant a lot to White Sox fans. Like you say, the voice and being of the South Side mattered, I think, for that broadcast. And it mattered to Ed, and I think it mattered to Sox fans. I heard a lot of people tell me the same. I've had a lot of conversations with Sox fans about the same. I think what's cool about Ed is that, you know, regardless of who you, I think I've told the story before, but when I started working for the White Sox, as the pre and post game host, one of the first times I met Ed was before the season started. And, you know, he looks at me and says, "So, Connor McKnight, huh?" I said, "Yeah, Ed, it's really nice to meet you. That we hadn't met before, but it's nice to meet you. I'm really looking forward to be working with you." And he says, "So you're going to come over here and do this job, huh?" I said, "Yeah, Ed, I'm really looking forward to it." And he says, "I know who you are. I know where you came from." And I'm looking at him going, Ed, what are you talking about, man? And he's like, I know who you are. I called some people. I did my work. I talked around. You're a Cubs fan, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, Ed, I mean, I grew up a Cubs fan, but I moved around a lot. You know, I've told you this, Dan. I moved around a lot. I loved Frank Thomas growing up. I always liked the White Sox. I didn't have the rivalry that a lot of other people grow up with here in town." He says, "Ah, that's too bad. You'll get it. You missed that. Anyway, I'm looking forward to working with you." And it was just this, he had a way of wanting to know where you were from, because I don't know, maybe because that meant so much to him, because where he was from meant so much to him. There's a video that the White Sox have just tweeted out recently, and I guess it was filmed, I don't know, I suppose it was just before last season started. And, you know, it's about 4 minutes long, and he talks about growing up on the South Side. He talks about how he was raised by his mother. And, boy, I remember him telling me how he would, you know, one of his first trips to the ballpark, he walks up and sees all of the green and just can't believe that it's there. You know, telling his mom that he's going to be, you know, he's going to play on this field. And his mom telling him, "Nah, well, Ed, if you're good enough, you know, you'll get here." She made him work. He was devoted to her. You know, that was she was his driving force to become the player he ended up becoming.
He was an interesting dichotomy of toughness and even beyond toughness, a little bit of meanness in the way that he played, mm-hmm. with not being that way away from the field. I mean, he was kind of a nasty cat on the mound, and it came through a little bit in his broadcasting. I'm old enough to remember. I was 10 years old, and I vividly remember the Al Cowens incidents, plural. And I don't know if he ever talked to you about those, if that ever came up. What he was sort of known for nationally,
mm-hmm.
was his, in 1979, and it was in the spring. It was before I went away to camp. Then, I want to say probably in May, maybe early June, and White Sox are playing the Royals, and he throws a fastball right into Al Cowens' face. And I think it broke his jaw, put him out for like 3 weeks, something like that. And then he also in that game hit Frank White, who was standing a little too close to the plate and broke his wrist. So, I mean, imagine a pitcher doing that now. Imagine what would happen if a pitcher, you know, stays in the game, you know, blasts a guy's face, breaks his jaw, knocks teeth out, and then takes out, you know, breaks a bone of an all-star second baseman. And that's just the way when you got too close to the plate or he had some issue that was going down. Then later, after Cowens came back, there was a ground ball. I think it was to short. And don't hold me to this because I know it's a ground ball. Ed Farmer turns his back. Instead of running to first, Cowens attacks, runs directly to the mound and attacks Farmio. And what was amazing is that it ultimately got settled with just a handshake. Like if for whatever reason, there was some detente in there. And I think they brought the lineup cards out in a game later, near the end of the season, but it was this simmering thing. It was a big national story. And that was, as a fan, that was sort of your defining moment for, like, Ed Farmer was that guy who, and then later when I finally got to meet him and he was just so gentle. I mean, he could be gruff, but he was so gentle. It didn't really square with me that was the same dude. Cause 10-year-old me thought that this guy was just nothing but menace. And he really was anything but.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you would walk through the broadcast booth, or you would walk through the concourse there where you've got the television booth on one side and then the visiting television booth. And then as you go down, number four, Ed and DJ had the broadcast there. And I think you said it well. He could absolutely be gruff, but I think there was purpose to that. And I think that's kind of the way Ed was. But before a White Sox game would start, I mean, Ed was receiving people at the ballpark. I mean, groups would come through and say hello to Ed Farmer. They would, you know, he'd have old friends come up. He'd have visiting dignitaries and emissaries and ambassadors and stuff stop by the broadcast booth because he was Ed Farmer, and people came up there just to say hi and chat and talk baseball and stuff. There would just be so many people. I mean, it was just this. That was the party room. I mean, people were in there to go hang out and talk with Ed. And, you know, DJ would be trying to get his stuff done before a game and working and thing, looking around going, my God, how many more people can get in here? But that was the way the guy was. And you're right. That doesn't really square, I guess, with the way he pitched and with the kind of violence that he was willing to have in his game, mm-hmm. at a particular time. But, you know, people are often kind of two people. And if that was work, Ed, then this kind of work, this broadcast work, was a lot different. And it was a lot more, you know, just kind of welcoming and wanting people to be, you know, having people around and having that kind of conversation be constant was very much part of Ed.
You never knew where the conversations were going to lead either, because you could be sitting in the dugout with him before a game or, you know, waiting around, even just sort of in the hallway or something in the booth. And he'd mention, I don't know how the name came up, but the old Rangers pitcher Doc Medich, who at one point was like a med student. I don't know if he ever actually became a doctor, but his nickname was Doc. And Farmer's like, oh, sure, I know Doc Medich. And he tells a story. He's like, you know, one time we just got bored and he showed me how to diagram the molecule for formaldehyde. And that's, yeah. People were asking me what I'm doing. And I got a notebook out and he's showing me how to diagram molecules. And, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't think we'd be talking about it. But it was, guy had a lot of unique life experiences that that often found their way into casual conversation. This segment is brought to you by Denny's. Denny's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Order your favorites from Denny's at Denny's.com. Pick it up or have your Denny's favorites delivered right to your door with free delivery. You're hungry. Denny's delivers for free. Order now at Denny's.com. Sad day. A longtime Chicago sports voice and an all-star Chicago athlete has passed away at the age of 70. We are remembering Ed Farmer, and I want you to do so too if you have thoughts, because everybody's got a different kind of relationship with him as a listener and as a White Sox fan. What are your thoughts? Feel free to share. We're very happy to talk to you about it. 312-644-6767, along with Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We are Bernstein and McKnight, middays 9 to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Everybody up here at U.S. Cellular. Sox 5 runs, 6 hits. The 2-1 to Bartlett. Swing, chop to short. Ramirez has it, throws. Burley picks the perfect game. His second no-hitter. He no-hits the Tampa Bay Rays. People going crazy here at U.S. Cellular. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
That's real emotion from a real dude. Ed Farmer passed away last night at the age of 70, a unique broadcasting voice. And Connor, I love the story that you told where he was looking askance at you, the possibility that you might just be an undercover Cubs fan.
Because yeah.
the rivalry mattered to him. And that edge, that sort of, that he really wore, you know, we used to make fun for years. We would make fun of the White Sox fan who would rather curse the darkness than light a candle. The White Sox fan saying, oh, we're not the Cubs. The Cubs get all the attention. Everyone loves the Cubs and no one loves us. He embraced that sort of and team stepchild kind of thing, and he I don't know, it's weird to say that he enjoyed it, but I know he embraced it, he welcomed it, however that came through him, came through in a real way.
It always seemed to me that he loved rivalry as a concept.
He hated
the Yankees. He hated the Yankees, and I'll tell a story later on about just how much that transferred over to a lot of things, even just remotely connected with the Yankees. But he hated the Yankees. He felt that rivalry with the Cubs, and I think those were important concepts to him as a competitor, as an athlete, and even as a broadcaster. I told the story about when I met Ed just before the season started in 2016, and he was kind of grilling me about being a Cubs fan. That was here in Chicago a couple weeks after that. Spring training started, and I went down as the pre- and post-game host to, you know, perform some duties and get some radio stuff, you know, the liners and things from players. You know, hey, I'm, you know, Adam Eaton, and you're listening to White Sox Radio on whatever. You had to ask Adam Eaton a couple times for that, but still, he would do it, and he'd get the things done and all that kind of stuff. So I'm down there, and I'm doing a couple pre-game shows. You know, it's working for another shop, and it was their first time having baseball on the air, so we wanted to do full broadcasts for a little while. And I had bought this big scorebook, right? The kind of broadcast book that you keep a whole sure. bunch of notes in, and just, you know, it's really big, so you could be very specific with it. And I'm up in the booth with Ed and DJ through a spring training game, and, you know, it's my first game sitting down with the two of them with the broadcast there. And I had done the pregame show, and we had gotten through, I don't know, maybe 6 outs, maybe 7 outs, maybe, you know, I'll call it 9. And Ed turns around right after he sends it to break, and he says, hey, let me see the book. And I go, what? He goes, let me see your book. I want to see how you keep book. And I go, okay. And I had been keeping book, thank God. I had been keeping the book, and I handed it to Ed, and he, you know, looks it over. I felt like I had just handed in a test that I didn't know I was taking to a teacher that I didn't know was teaching. And I hand him the book, and I'm getting nervous because I'm like, oh my God, I hope this is okay. And he looks at me, and he hands the book back, and he says, so you're a pretty classic bookkeep, huh? And I said, yeah, you know, not a lot of frills and that kind of thing. He said, that's good. That's good. It's uncomplicated. And he gave me a little tip. I'll never forget it. And I've been doing it since I kept track of book. You know, you write K down for a batter who's struck out. And he just said, when you're making notes, what'll help you in the post-game show is just put a little number next to the strikeout. One, then two, then three. It's a really easy, quick way to keep track of how many strikeouts the pitcher had throughout the day. You don't have to go back and count them up when you're done with the thing. It'll just be there at the end of the game for you. I said, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And I just remember being really glad that I had passed the Ed Farmer how do you keep score at a baseball game test.
Bill on Capitol Hill is on Bernstein and McKnight. Hi, Bill.
Hey, lads. My personal condolences. I hope your grief passes quickly and that his memory becomes a blessing. Seriously.
Thanks, Bill.
For whatever it's worth, I mean, you know, we've talked a lot. I mean, radio is an extremely intimate medium anyway, right? There's just something about these disembodied voices that you come to know. And I mean, you know, in my own case, like, you know, I've done both TV and radio, but like I actually have made friends through my radio experience, including you two, which I'm grateful for. But the thing about Ed Farmer, that sort of laconic, understated, and occasionally you could hear the mean streak in him, even in amongst the sort of goofy stories about, you know, formaldehyde drawings or Southern California life. What was amazing about it, and we were talking the other day about the Bulls and how it brought out sort of the goober element of Chicago. Like, you know, Ed Farmer seems to me to be the positive side of that. And because really what he was is a middle-class Catholic kid who couldn't believe his luck, right? And if you listen to some of his best calls, even amongst that sort of, you know, laconic and sometimes, you know, to the point of comatose delivery, there's a wonder, like, I can't believe I get to see this happen. Can you believe this? And I think, you know, Dan, to your point about him as a broadcaster, I think he may well be underrated even to this day because, he had multiple different partners over his career and he found a way to accommodate all of them into the broadcast seamlessly, right? Without sort of changing his delivery. But if you listen to those broadcasts, the way he talks with Stone is very different the way they talk to Chris Stapleton. And, you know, and I think that there's two different tensions there. You were talking about his mean streak. You know, I remember, for instance, in the, I guess it was the late 90s or early aughts, when he broke on Barry Bonds and what a jerk he was, right? And it, for me, as an angry, right, you know, daylight Christine Sox fan, that was like so therapeutic. It's like, okay, he gets me. He knows where I'm feeling about this. But then, you know, towards the end of his career, he and DJ, I mean, the voice modulated yet again slightly to become, you know, your occasionally cranky uncle sitting in a garage just talking nonsense. And you think about, I mean, we made fun of, and I still make fun of, his warning to the Jews.
Yes.
think about this, like, and I'm fairly familiar with the Southside Catholic milieu. That's not a native thought, to be generous to the Jews on Passover or any other time, right? Like,
no, but he meant it. That's the thing. My favorite part of that. He's like, he looks at the engineer and he's like, our engineer Al Rosen, and for everybody celebrating Passover and having drive safely tonight, because he obviously knows that there is the glasses of wine you have to drink, and it just.
About the way he grew into his love, right? Like the thing is, it's not just for a lot. Like we can see many examples of old people who don't grow more loving, right? And it's one of the problems we're having right now is that there's a bunch of old people who don't have a lot of love. He grew into an ethos of love, and so, you know, it's like the old, now he's gone, and it's the, you know, the pathos of the old poem that, you know, are almost in sync is almost true. What will survive us is love. Anyway, lads, be safe and be well.
Good stuff, Bill. You too. Thanks, Bill. I'm glad you brought that up because that is, we always made a joke out of it. He wasn't kidding. He meant it. He wanted to be safe.
Ed would joke about himself and mistakes that he made and stuff. I remember you remember opening day 2016 for the White Sox. Well, it wasn't opening day, but it was the first game. At Guaranteed Rate Field. It was snowing, right? This is Chance the Rapper throwing out the first pitch.
Yes.
At the ballpark, you got snow coming down. The White Sox got their brains beat in by the Indians, and John Danks is on the mound, right? So I guess I kind of said the same thing twice there, but it's that first day, and it's snowing, right? And I think it was Austin Jackson for the White Sox, if I remember right. And Austin Jackson hits a fly ball out to center field. You know, easy fly ball, nothing on it. This is just a normal fly ball out to center field. Guy barely had to move out there. It's snowing hard. And Ed is watching the game and calling it. And Ed calls Austin Jackson's lazy fly ball to center field, base hit, line drive down into center. And my head pops up. DJ's head pops up, and I'll never forget this. He realizes that he's got it wrong. And then on the broadcast, because this is what Ed would just say it. He goes, "That's my mistake, folks. I call a snowflake. Was watching out there, thought it was the baseball, saw a snowflake. That's an easy fly ball to center field. Jackson's retired." Like, he would just say it. And that's kind of Ed Farmer.
Yeah, well, most radio people have been taught if they can't watch it at home, go ahead and fix it however you need, because it's your canvas.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't going to play that. No way. This is Paul in Woodridge on the Score. Hello, Paul.
Hey, how you doing? Always listen to you guys. Thank you for being here right now. The first time I met him, met Ed, was for organ donation, which he was a really, really big supporter of. And the first time I met him in line getting an autograph of a baseball and a picture, he said, "Oh, you had a heart transplant, huh?" And I said, "Yes, yeah, it's about a year and a half ago." And he says, "Well, what kind of immune suppressants are you on?" And we stayed there and talked for about 5 minutes on just immune suppressants, and somebody has to come up and tell him, "Ed, there's more people in line." I mean, the guy was just... It's unreal. I'm one of the guys that can watch the game on TV, but I have to listen to the radio broadcast. And when I got up and I heard that he had passed away, all I had to do, I couldn't help but grab my rosary and say a couple prayers. I mean, the guy was just fantastic to me, and I'll miss him for the rest of my life. And well, that's my story about him. Go Sox. It's going to be a sad year with this happening, but thanks for being there through all this. We're all spending a lot of time at home, and you guys help pass the time.
Paul, thank you for listening. We appreciate it, and thanks for sharing the story. Let's try Jim in Westmont next on the Score. What's happening, Jim?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for making the day go by a little bit faster during these times. My story with Ed is I remember my brother played travel baseball for a team out of Marquette Park. And 10 years prior, Ed was on that team. And when he became a member of the White Sox, he would come out when they were practicing and he would give them pep talks, pointers. He even gave them, like, player-worn spikes so that everybody would be in, you know, uniform, pretty much same color spikes and everything. And he would donate equipment from the White Sox. I mean, that's just the type of guy he was. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think with Ed, like, that his connection to the neighborhood that he grew up in, to the White Sox fan, was pretty palpable. To our previous caller there, Paul, who mentioned the conversation he had with Ed about immunosuppressants. I remember once Ed and DJ and I were asked by the White Sox to go participate in just a charity day, like an outreach kind of thing. A lot of players were doing some stuff, and they asked the broadcast team to go out and help out too. So we went out to Northwestern Hospital, and they just wanted us to, they wanted Ed to walk around and say hello to White Sox fans who were in the hospital and laid up with, you know, whatever they had been sticking in the hospital with. And I just remember showing up to Northwestern that day, and, you know, I was there, and DJ roll up, and Ed was, I don't know how best to describe it. Ed was there. He was there to do this because he understood, I think, in a way that I certainly didn't at the time, what it is to go through a transplant like a lot of these people have been through, what it is to go through a medical procedure that is wholly necessary and altogether frightening and something that's going to stick with you the rest of your life. He was there for everybody we went to go see. And the nurses, the people who were walking us around to different hospital rooms and patients just to say hi, they'd have to, you know, go in and get Ed to get him to the next patient's room because Ed was just talking about whatever that person had had. He knew everything about having been in the hospital, what drugs they were on, the next procedure for them, what life was going to be like the next couple of weeks or months for that patient. And he was just there to talk. He was just there to talk to people. And he made a lot of people's days when we went through there at Northwestern. And I just, you know, to Paul's point, that's the kind of guy Ed could be. And Ed would always be in talking with people who had been through, you know, transplants like he had.
In Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, Dave is next on Bernstein and McKnight on the Score. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. Thanks very much for doing this. I'm sort of a very accidental Ed Farmer fan. I transplanted here to the Midwest in the early 80s and gravitated to become a Cubs fan, not one of the Bleeding Blue Cubs fans, but one that, you know, I sort of identified myself when asked, as we all are when you live in this part of the world. But what happened to me over the years is, you know, in commercial breaks or whatever else, or days off, I find myself hitting on the channel and listening to Ed Farmer broadcasting the Sox. And while I wasn't there to listen to the Sox, didn't necessarily care anything about the Sox, I loved listening to Ed Farmer's broadcasts. I'm Ed's contemporary. I'm 72. Ed's a little, you know, a year younger than me. I was a pitcher in college, so I always, as I knew more about Ed, I kind of related to Ed, even though I didn't certainly have the success he did, not having ever played in the major leagues. But there was a bit of an identification, and one of the things I think, as someone who played the game at a relatively high level, there was a kind of an observation that Ed brought to the broadcast. And I always sort of felt a little bit like I was an insider. They're just sort of, colloquialisms or observations that he would make that would draw me to those broadcasts, and I would stay on a Sox broadcast far longer because of Ed Farmer. Mm.
That's good stuff. Thanks. We appreciate it, Dave. Earlier today, our boss, the operations director of the Score, Mitch Rosen, who was a longtime and dear friend of Ed Farmer, was on with our morning guys, Mully and Haw, and he related a favorite story of his that took place at Yankee Stadium.
When Ed was 13 or 14 years old, he and his brothers, their goal was to go see Yankee Stadium. For some reason, they wanted to see Yankee Stadium and where Mickey Mantle played and Joe DiMaggio. So their mother saved up money. Ed did not come from a lot of money. So he told me this story that saved a lot of money, and his mother took he and his two brothers to Yankee Stadium. The Yankees were out of town, so they go up to the gate, and there was a security guard there. And she said, "I'm here from Chicago. My two sons, all they want to do is go inside Yankee Stadium. They just want to see it." And the security guard was a real jerk, and he said, "No, ma'am, you know, get lost. You're not coming in here." And Ed always remembered the security guard was missing a thumb. Somehow, some way, the security guard did not have a thumb. All right, so now fast forward, Ed was 13 or 14, whatever age when he made it to Major League Baseball, 23, 25 years old. Do you guys remember when they used to pull pitchers in from the bullpen? They used to get in like at a golf cart with a bubble.
Yes.
That looked like a baseball.
Yeah.
So the guy that picks Ed up in the bullpen for his first time at Yankee Stadium to come in relief, I don't know what team he was pitching for, it's the same blank that told his mother. How does Ed know that? He was missing a thumb. So Ed's driving in this cart with this guy, and he says, "You son of a blank, you're the one that didn't let my mother, myself, and my brothers in. Now I'm blank and pitching in Yankee Stadium. You can go blank yourself."
God, I love that story.
A lot of blanks in there.
Oh, I love that story.
That's a... That is an absolute classic. Coming up next, we're going to talk with a longtime close friend of Ed Farmer and a guy we've spoken with on these airwaves many, many times, Dan Evans, who was a former assistant general manager and director of baseball operations for the White Sox, a one-time general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, a ubiquitous baseball presence, and a dear guy. Danny Evans is going to join us next to share his memories of Ed Farmer, who passed away last night at the age of 70. We are Bernstein and McKnight, and you have the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
A 2-2 to Tomey from Blackburn, a swing and a high fly ball, deep center field. Running back, Gomez, he's at the track, he's at the wall, gone! Tomey lights it up, Sox lead 1-0. He's hit his 34th, straightaway center.
I believe that would be the only run scored in the blackout game off of Nick Blackburn, the White Sox winning that memorable night at U.S. Cellular Field. Dan Evans had known Ed Farmer as well and for as long a time perhaps as anybody in the baseball business. And he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You can follow Dan on Twitter at DanEvans108. How you been, Dan?
How are you doing, guys? I mean, you just made me smile for the first time this morning playing that call with Eddie.
Well, what were your thoughts when you first heard? I know he'd been in failing health for some time, and those who'd been in touch with him had known that he had been fighting an uphill battle, but when that call comes, it's never easy.
Yeah, I got a phone call real early this morning, and you know, there's certain people that touch your life in a different way. And the White Sox fans need to know that Eddie was exactly who you thought he was listening to him on the radio. I mean, he was the kindest, most compassionate person I've ever met. And it's not close. That's just who he was. And a quick story, and it just tells you all about him. It's opening day 1981. I'm a 20-year-old junior at DePaul University, starting an internship with the White Sox, an internship that would last 19 years. And, you know, I was naive. I was scared. You guys both remember your first day in a pro clubhouse. You're like, I don't know the rules. I don't know the etiquette. I don't know the people. What the hell am I doing here? And Ed walks up to me. And I know who he is. I'm living in the city. I know he's the closer for the White Sox. And he walks up to me. He says, "Hi, I'm Ed Farmer." And I said, "Hi, nice to meet you." And he said, "Listen, I can tell you're new here. What's your name? And what are you doing?" So I told him. And he said, "Well, listen, I remember my first day in a big league clubhouse." And he says, "You're working for great people. Roland Heeman's one of the best people I've ever met in my life." And he said, "Anything I can do for you to make it a little easier, please just come up and reach out to me." Now, guys, people don't do that, okay? And that started a 40-year relationship that I just cherish. And all I keep thinking about is the smiles and the pranks and the golf and the brilliance of his baseball mind. But what I really remember is just this incredible bond that I had with a guy who, you know, just really embraced life and was such a special person.
If you, Dan, I imagine you talk around baseball, you talk to people who met Ed the same way you did. A lot of folks have a story about Ed coming up to them and making sure that they felt comfortable because that's what Ed wanted. I mean, I was talking earlier, I'd broadcast with Ed doing the pre and post for about 2 years, and his broadcast booth was filled with people who I'm sure had stories similar to yours in its tone and welcoming kind of nature. And people would just flock up there because Ed let it be known that that door was open for them. I suppose that's just kind of the way he was, whether he was playing or not.
Oh, Connor, you nailed it. And you know what? You knew you were Ed's friend if you were Ed's friend. And you know, most people are casual in relationships, and we all fall into that rut. He was never casual with his friendship. I'll tell you guys a really funny story. So I'm the GM of the Dodgers opening day 2002. We lose 9-2. It's a day game, and I'm just so pissed off. You know, he's played crappy in front of 55,000 people. And I'm walking back to my office, and my cell phone rings, and it's Farmer. And you can't not take Ed Farmer's phone call. So I pick it up, and he goes, "Hey." And I said, "Hey, what's going on?" And he said, "Hey, you got to find out who the new GM of the Dodgers is." He said, "Did he put together a pathetic team?" And, you know, I'm laughing, but there's a lot of fans around. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to be laughing after a 9-2 opening day loss. And I said to him, I said, "Well, at least you got the score right." And he said to me, he says, "Hey, I'm going to make a prediction right now. Before the season's over, you're going to win your first game as a GM." And I said, "Well, Edward, I got news for you. If I don't, you're going to have to come and play a lot of golf with me." I want to tell another funny story, though, about him that to me is just one of the Ed Farmer stories that I'll never forget. It's one of my most fun life moments. If you hung with Ed a lot, you were his buddy, you played a lot of golf with him, and I'm thankful. I mean, Danny, I think you know, I played a ton of golf with Edward and played some of the greatest courses in the world with him. And Eddie could really play, and I was about a 12, so I would scuffle. So we had a guy in our group one day. It was just he and I were playing with two members, and we were on a course in San Francisco. Or no, in New York. And the guy had a terrible shot and threw his club into the water. And Eddie looks at me and he says to the guy, he goes, "You're not good enough to throw a golf club." He said, you're just not good enough to throw a club and be aggravated about your round. He said, "I want you to go get that club." And the guy laughed and he was all pissed off. He takes his shoes off and he goes and he gets the club for the guy. And he hands it to him, and he says to him, "I got news for you, pal. It's not the club." And, oh, my God, we laughed so hard. Well, this guy, two holes later, just about holes out. And from the tee box, he says, "All right, throw it now. Let's see it. Come on, throw it now." And the four of us, I was laughing so hard, I was crying. So we got in the car to go back, and we had a game in New York that night. We had a game with the Yanks, and Eddie says to me, he says, "You know, Danny, when I was a kid," he says, "my mom used to say to me, you have to be really good to be mad at yourself for not doing something athletically." He said, "Because most of the time you fail." And I said, "Yeah, but Eddie," I said, "this guy, you should have seen the look on his face when you started walking after the club." And he says to me, he says, "I just wanted to prove a point to him that it wasn't that big a deal." And that's who Ed Farmer was. He was just honestly the most fun person. The pranks that he pulled, oh, my God, guys. I was the victim many times. April Fool's Day was frightening. I mean, you were on high alert. You talk about red alert with the TSA guys. Oh, my God, red alert with Ed Farmer on April Fool's. It was frightening. You just didn't know what was coming next.
We're talking with longtime White Sox executive and former Dodgers general manager Dan Evans of the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. I mentioned earlier on, Dan, about it's odd for me because I remember so vividly as a young and impressionable White Sox fan, I was 10 years old when the Al Cowens incident occurred. And in the same game, you know, he obliterates Al Cowens. He broke Frank White's wrist in the same game. And my image of him as a kid, as a little kid, he was fearsome. And this, I mean, really kind of edgy, nasty. And then later on in life, when I got to know him, I still had to overcome what 10-year-old me had on his brain because of watching him and knowing what that national story of this guy, this vicious pitcher and moving people off the plate and throwing at their face. So it was sort of a process for me to realize, you know, and part of it is being in sports media that people are people and people are complicated. But as a fan, I always thought of him as this fearsome presence when he was actually so gentle.
Hey, Danny, that is a fabulous impression because I had the same growing up in Chicago, just like you, you know, I'm just a little bit older than you, and I had the same impression of the Collins incident. So I was honestly shocked when he came up to me in the clubhouse because I thought he was this absolutely fear-mongering, just, you know, mysteriously nasty guy. And instead he pulls that. So I get to know him a little bit that year, and I asked him one day. And, you know, he just said, hey, when I was on the field, it was absolutely a battle. And just working with him, Dan, as, you know, I'm the assistant GM. He's our special assistant at the time. He was intensely competitive. I got to travel with the club a little bit in 81. I just lucked out. And, you know, I saw a side of Ed, the competitive side, that, you know, was just intense. And I respected it because it was consistent. And it showed up in his broadcasting, and we all giggle. I mean, any of us who've listened to him, I gave him a hard time last year. I'm driving to the Field of Dreams last year, and he and Darren, I love the two of them a ton, and they're in a really bad game, and you could just hear it in Eddie's voice. So I pulled off to the side of the road on the 88 driving over to Iowa, and I text him, and I said, I just love that I can turn on the radio, and I know the score without knowing the score from your voice. And he texts me back and he said, it's only the fourth inning. and I just thought, that's Eddie. Well, it got worse. So I texted him when I crossed the Iowa border, and I texted him and I said, this potpourri of mopery is really pretty funny. And he said, Darren and I just wear it on our sleeves. And, you know, the thing about Ed and Danny, you nailed it. You know, you knew where Ed stood all the time. He wasn't passive aggressive. He told you, you know, if he was mad at you, he told you. And he also just cared. And, you know, a lot of us in sports get really lucky and get to do some really fun things. I mean, we get to meet people we shouldn't meet, but we also get to touch the lives of people whose lives aren't as positive and aren't as wonderful as ours are. And the one thing about Ed is he never lost that. So whenever there was someone in need or someone that was struggling, or he found out that you were going through a tough time, Ed was the guy before the game who would go up to that person, who would go say something, who would put in a phone call. You know, and that is not an easy thing to do, and it's going out of your way. And I'm sure there's so many White Sox fans that who experienced it. We were on a subway once in New York City coming back from a game, and he saw this poor guy in a wheelchair who was having trouble getting off the subway at a platform. So Ed bounced up. This is about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, helps the guy, and then waves us all, there's three of us, off the train. He helped the guy get downstairs and put him on his way. That doesn't happen. People like that just don't exist. And when they do, and they happen to be your friend, and it happens to be somebody that you spend a lot of time with, that rubs off on you because you just see the very good in a person like that. And it just makes you want to try real hard to be them. And I know that's what it did for me. I mean, he rubbed off on me in a big way because winning and losing were a big deal for Ed Farmer. But being a good person, being compassionate, being kind, that was the epicenter of Ed Farmer. And when you were around him and when you were with him, you were better off in his presence because his laughter, his kindness, it just made your world a little bit better. I mean, I'm crushed. I'm just like, I had so many great experiences with this guy and so many just outbursts of laughter. And then I get this call this morning, and I'm just going to choose to celebrate his life because the last couple calls I had, I could tell it wasn't good. But I refuse to be just sad thinking about Ed Farmer because it wouldn't be right. Ed Farmer made you happy, and the fans need to know that the guy they would turn on and listen to, that was exactly him. He cared so much about the team, and he cared so much about people, and I love the fact that it showed in everything he did.
Dan Evans, I'm sorry for your loss, and I am happy that you were able to say we really appreciate your time.
Well, thanks to both of you. And Danny, good talking to you. Haven't chatted for a long time. You've always been one of my favorite media guys there. So thanks a bunch for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. That is Dan Evans, longtime MLB executive. And it's good to hear from him. Sorry, it's circumstances like this that that bring out that connection, because he's one of the really nice guys in baseball. We're going to talk to another one of baseball's good guys in just a moment. Ryan Dempster has been doing some things via his Instagram feed through the Marquee Network on Twitter as well. He's been sharing some videos, some baseball things, and some help for young pitchers out there, young athletes out there trying to keep themselves in a little bit of shape. We're going to talk about the efforts of Ryan Dempster with Ryan Dempster in just a moment on The Score.